Hello, today is Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. I'm Joe Schmidt with TC2, and this is Staying Connected. On today's podcast, we are covering the continuing evolution of managed network services deal as part of our Staying Connected podcast series titled Staying Ahead of the Demand for Network Cost Savings. On the podcast series, we've been covering a range of ICT topics and providing some valuable strategies that will help enterprises achieve continuous network cost improvement and deliver world-class network infrastructure. On today's podcast, I'm joined by Ben Fox, one of TC2's managing directors, and Mark Lindsay, who is a senior partner at LB3. And Mark is also president of Avenue 4, a leading IPv4 advisory firm. Ben and Mark, they recently had two articles published in Network World on the continuing evolution of managed network services deals. Those articles covered a lot of ground regarding managed services deals. So on today's podcast, Ben and Mark are going to touch on a few of the key areas that they covered. All right, Mark, the Network World articles discussed the increasing sophistication of managed network services deals. How about if you provide some insight into this changing market?
Yes, thanks, Joe. And as Ben and I discussed in our article, outsourcing has changed dramatically over the last several years. The big deal where companies transfer the IT departments and all their assets for a 7-10 year multi-year term, those days are gone. Outsourcing transactions are now very targeted on discrete service towers and functions. This very granular approach now dominates the modern network infrastructure deals. And in these deals, we're talking about enterprises are increasingly acquiring a complex mix of managed services, managed network services in particular, and they are sourced from multiple suppliers, typically based on their capabilities. When structuring these deals, as I mentioned, enterprises are selecting providers based on their capabilities and expertise and fine-tuning, you know, which of those providers receive the service towers and functions that are in scope. Examples in the managed network service space of capabilities that may differentiate your supplier include the capabilities in legacy voice services, unified communication, managing wide area networks, wireless, LAN, as well as security services. In doing this and pursuing this approach, the best outcomes are realized when enterprises vary the functions they outsource, not just between suppliers, but vary the amount that they outsource versus what they retain. They will rely on and continue to keep in-house those functions that are performed by strong in-house resources, and then they'll turn to the market and purchase technology expertise and resources that are either unavailable internally or sufficiently commoditized that they can be delivered cheaper and more efficiently by the external providers.
All right, so Ben, what are some of the primary drivers for managed network services deals that you're working on?
Yeah, there's a range of different reasons, really, Joe. So, for instance, the traditional driver for outsourcing of this desire to deliver strategic functions internally but use external services, third-party services for non-core function, that still features as a driver for managed services deals. There's obviously a lot of existing managed network services arrangements that are coming to the end of their contract. The customer wants to go to the market to evolve those services, to see what else is out there, what are alternative service providers, alternative models are available to improve their managed services. That's a big driver. We increasingly see managed services now used and deployed as an enabler for transformation. So using providers to build and then to deploy and operate new technologies can allow customers to deliver transformation at a far greater pace and an increasing scale. You know, that could be unified communications. It could be upgrading your on-site LAN and wireless LAN infrastructure to enable better digitization for your users. It can be SD-WAN and internet-first strategies. And the investment in those managed services, we find, is rapidly paid back by simply being able to accelerate those transformation cost savings. And then the other reason we see quite a lot is simply the act of outsourcing is the transformation. So it drives operational transformation by putting in place best-of-breed external support and tools for routine, non-strategic network operations. And that allows the customer to reorganize their operations and refocus their resources on strategic activities. For instance, delivering new technologies and capabilities to users, but also better managing the existing services and service providers and driving cost reduction, which is what this podcast series is all about.
So, Mark, what would you say are some success factors for sourcing managed network services?
Yeah, there are quite a few, but what I'd say one of the key starting on a good foot success criteria is to make sure that the scope of the managed services you're seeking to source is defined with great specificity. Whether a particular function or activity is in or out of scope oftentimes leads to disputes of economic consequence. If something is in scope, then the base charges you've negotiated for the outsourced managed services function will be performed for the base charges. On the other hand, if something is declared out of scope, the provider will frequently or almost always demand an upcharge to perform that function. So it has economic consequences to make sure that you precisely define that scope. You can do that by making sure that you describe the in-scope services during the RFP process. Doing this at the outset with your internal team has several benefits that will ultimately drive dividends later on in the process. It will help you understand from an internal perspective what exactly is going to be outsourced, so there's no confusion on the team about what's being retained, what's outsourced. It also helps ensure that the proposals received from your providers will cover all the functions and scope you need and can be evaluated on a like-for-like basis. This facilitates a very efficient and objective down-select process once you start reviewing the proposals that come in.
So, Ben, what do you think? Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'd add that I think one of the aspects of successful managed services deals that's really important in the environment we've been talking about of using multiple managed services suppliers for particular technology towers is how you enable the integration of those different managed services and those different service providers. And that really starts with the RFP. So what we find now is that, you know, large companies have in general developed pretty mature standard working practices and operating procedures and various policies that they expect to apply to all of their major service providers. So for instance, covering change management, incident resolution, integration and use of the customer's tools, their invoicing requirements, personal data safeguards, and minimum security controls. So imposing those same processes and policies and procedures on your major suppliers makes it so much easier to integrate a diverse mix of managed services and managed service providers. But the truth is that not all service providers are willing, or at least readily willing, to conform their processes to the customer's policies and procedures. They really want to apply their own approaches, their own tools, etc., and they may not align well with the customer's policies and procedures. So the best practice really to meet this need of being able to integrate multiple providers is to provide those processes and those procedures with which you expect the service providers to comply with. Use those and put those out there at the start of your process to source the services and to select your service providers. You know, not at the end, for instance, when you start negotiating contracts. So, for example, include a copy of your change management policy with your RFP document. And that just means that you can pick those service providers that will adjust their processes or conform with your processes as you need, and therefore be able to integrate more seamlessly with other managed network service providers in parallel towers that you might be using.
All right, let me just inject that we're going to record a podcast for this series that focuses on contracts and business terms. But Mark, you are the lawyer amongst us today. So why don't you tell us what some important contract terms are for a managed network services deal?
Yeah, sure, Joe. Front end, you know, of course, we like to help our clients pick the right providers and structure the right deals and document it all effectively to minimize disputes. But sometimes things just don't work out as expected. So one of the things we like to make sure is clearly addressed is the exit rights and exit responsibilities when the provider is underperforming. When providers underperform, the agreement should allow the customer to terminate the agreement or the affected services when there are chronic or sufficiently severe service level failures that fall below a preset, objectively defined critical performance failure level. That critical performance threshold can be based on repeat service level failures over some defined period, or it could be a single or a small number of failures that just are so bad that it's worth terminating the service tower or the agreement entirely. Termination when the supplier fails to maintain the regulatory approval or legal authority to provide the in-scope services throughout the geographic footprint. Many of our clients are multinational, and making sure your provider can cover the geographic footprint you need is an important element. And when they can no longer do that, exiting from that market is an important trigger. A similar point is that some suppliers just decide voluntarily because the burden of maintaining compliance in a particular country is too difficult for them. So they will sometimes, you know, services out of a particular region. Having the right to terminate services or dependent services is also an important way to manage a rescoping if you need to. They're also, we like to think about a broad catch-all set of terms that aren't unique to service level failures, but oftentimes is a collection, a series of contract violations that all rise to the level of a material and adverse effect on the customer's use and enjoyment of the services and the benefit of their bargain. So it's less objective than some of these other standards, but we do like to include a series of provisions that allow for the customer to exit when a collection of failures and contract noncompliances are sufficiently poor that it warrants pulling the termination trigger. Oftentimes, force majeure events are thought about as it's nobody's fault, so we all ought to be excused. But periodically, force majeure events affect a particular provider differently. And there may be some tolerance for limitations of liability or no exposure of liability for your provider for not complying during the force majeure event. On the other side, you as a customer can't go for a protracted period of time without getting critical services delivered. So having the right to terminate when a force majeure event affects your provider on a protracted basis is an important termination trigger. To allow and actually give effect to an exit, the managed service agreement should also provide clear guidance on transition services. Transition services are the services that the provider must provide to the customer upon exit, termination, or expiration of the deal. That's typically a mix of several components. One is a continuation of the core base services on the same terms and conditions as the services decline. There also is important that the client be allowed to ramp down its consumption of services over that period of time without any adverse effect on quality or unit rates.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark. And Ben, thank you as well. And thank you to our listening audience. If you haven't read Mark and Ben's Network World articles, I really do encourage you to do so. And if you need a copy, just let us know.
On our next podcast in this Staying Connected podcast series, we will be discussing broadband aggregation, which is becoming increasingly important to enterprises. I'll be joined by my colleagues Tony Mangino and Andrew Brown, so please look out for messages from us, providing links to the latest podcasts, or simply go to our websites.
And if you, the listening audience, would like to learn more about best practices for ICT procurements, or if you'd like to discuss other ICT needs with Mark or Ben, me, or any of our LB3 and PC2 colleagues, please give us a call or drop us an email. And as always, you can stay current by checking out our websites or follow us on LinkedIn.